Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Priscilla. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for the invitation to chat. I'm looking forward to catching up with you.
I know. I'm so excited to chat with you. So we chatted a few times this past year. So what have you been up to?
Oh, goodness. Well, like a lot of people working from home and missing loved ones, I'm super thankful now. Actually, right now, I am not in my writing cave in Florida. I am actually in a new writing cave up in Philly. I'm fully vaccinated. My middle daughter and her husband are as well. So for Mother's Day, I flew up here to Philly. And so I'm with family. It was just a wonderful reunion. It was the longest I'd been without getting to see her, you know, without getting to hug her in person. So just like many, I've been trying to be safe and stay at home and meet my deadlines and learning about technology, Zoom parties and Instagram Live and all the fun ways that we've been able to kind of stay connected with loved ones and meet new friends and new people online. But thankful to be here and thankful to be having a book released out to chat about and talk with you again.
I love this. And yeah, we have a couple of books to talk about. You know, it's great that we actually, you know, I think the pandemic has allowed us to connect with other audiences, like, you know, through Zoom and social media and different places. But it's also exciting to see the people now that we're fully vaccinated to give hugs and, and see someone be like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in a year, you know, and working.
Yes, I warned my middle daughter. I said, okay, when I see you, it's going to be like a long, long hug. And sure enough, we were, you know, in the pickup lane at the Philly airport, and I hugged until like the security guard, you know, pulled up alongside, and I knew he was going to be like, ma'am, moving along.
Yeah.
But it was nice. It's a blessing that we're all still here. I know there are a lot of people, unfortunately, who lost a loved one, and, you know, keeping everyone who's still, you know, that over in India, a lot of other countries are still fighting hard. So, you know, keeping all of them in my prayers and feeling thankful that even though we've been apart, my girls and I are still here. Eventually I'll get to the other two.
Yes. Oh, so good. Yeah. I feel the pain. Like it's been traumatic. It's just been like a whole, you know, just going through it. And so, you know, I'm grateful that we made it through the other side. Like, I'm getting my second shot tomorrow. I'm like, it's a very Chicago experience, I have to tell you. So, you know, Chicago politics is well known for its own politics. And so an alderman decided to do a mass vaccination party. And so schedule it for the Thursday after everyone was eligible to do it. And so when I went to get my vaccine, it's basically vote for the councilman or the alderman. So it's very like, okay, it's a very political event, but I'm like, I'm getting my second shot. I don't live in this district. So I'm like, I'm not your ideal voter, but I am grateful for that. But it's a very Chicago experience that I'll always remember. I was like, I just went to an alderman's vaccination party.
Oh my goodness, that's funny. So you had a Chicago experience. I live in Gainesville, where the University of Florida is. Go Gators. And so my vaccine experience was I got mine at Florida Field, home of the Fighting Florida Gators. I went and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've been to the stadium since pre-pandemic. Because my mom and I have season tickets and we go to the football games. Papi goes and tailgates with us and then he rides his moped home to the AC and my mom and I go inside. Mommy and I go in and we sweat with everybody else while we're cheering. But because of the pandemic, you know, we didn't go to the games, even though they did have, you know, some social distancing. We were just we did total lockdown because my both my parents have pre-existing conditions with their ages, as well as their ages. And so I did pretty much nothing. They did pretty much nothing. So we didn't go, but we didn't go anywhere, especially not to football games, or including football games. So my Moderna vaccine experience was, you know, I went outside, I cheered for a little bit, you know, like the boys were down there playing, and during my 15 minutes after I had my shot, and then headed home. I took some pictures. Usually, you know, usually my social media feed has pictures of mommy and me, you know, at the stadium, and I was like, first one in over a year. You know, but so we both had experiences unique to where we live. But the silver lining is we got our vaccines. Amen. You know.
Yep, we got the shot. So this is exciting. Yes. So what has been the process of writing this past year? Has it been any easier, any harder? How are you managing it all?
Wow. Well, I will say deadlines are a good motivator. Deadlines, and for me, that sense of responsibility, like, you know, my editor's expecting something, my agent is expecting something, so I will deliver that something to them, right? But, you know, I've had some friends that said, you know, I was just able to focus on my writing and get stuff done. I wrote more than I ever have. And for me, it was harder for me to shut out the real world. Usually I can just put on music and, you know, I have a special Pandora radio station that I play, that I created, a Luis Miguel Romances. So it plays classics and new, you know, romantic love songs. And so we'll find me taking dance breaks periodically. If I'm either listening to that one, or Pandora has a great Latin workout station that has a lot of my Zumba songs. But usually I'm listening to one of those, and I can fall into my story world. But with the pandemic, you know, having my girls live all over, having familia all over, having a daughter working at a hospital on the front line, so I would see every day, you know, the harrowing experience and the trials that they were dealing with, I had a harder time shutting the world out. And I would try to, I think the analogy I said earlier on another podcast or something was, I felt like I would try to dive into the deep end with my characters to swim around in their story world. But someone, you know, on the side of the pool, like the real world on the side of the pool, had a rope around my stomach and they were tugging me out. Mm-hmm. So I had to really just learn, instead of writing for like an hour, like big chunks of time, I just had to try to be the most productive in these little chunks of time before I found myself like thinking of, oh, I need to go check on somebody, or let me check the news, or so it was distracting, but you just, you know, when you have a deadline, you have to get done what you have to do, you know, because you have responsibilities. But it was not as easy as it has been. And I don't think writing a book is ever easy, but I felt more distracted and more more concern. I will say, at the same time, Anchored Hearts, the book that just released that I was working on last year, along with the novella that's in the anthology Summer in the City, coming out at the end of this month. Anchored Hearts is a second chance romance. There's a lot of angst between Ana Maria and Alejandro. Mm-hmm. It's also a second chance relationship for Alejandro and his father. They had a really big rift and they have barely spoken in the last 12 years. And so maybe my hope is that all that angst that I had about my loved ones and all that, hopefully I was able to channel that into the book and it worked for that. Or that could just be me trying to put a spin on it and find a silver lining and all the angst and anxiety I felt last year, hoping that it came out, it was worth it in one way or another. I'm not sure. I hope so.
I think, you know, this was much more angstier than Island Affair. So I would say agree. Yeah. You know, this is like more like low, it's more emotional. I think the whole Alejandro and his father relationship, like the healing, the process, and then Ana Maria and Alejandro going in and like second chance romance and why they broke up and, you know, like, and then coming back together. It's definitely much more emotional. It's much more angstier. It's heightened emotions. Like, I feel like it's more emotional than Island Affair. Island Affair was like a little trip to Key West. Like, ooh, we're just gonna go on a trip, gonna fake relationship. Like, a little frothy.
Yes, yes. It's funny that you say that because I do think both the Keys to Love series, which are both Island Affair book one and now Anchored Hearts book two, as of now, there are two of them. I grew up in Key West, junior high and high school. My dad was in the military, in the Navy, and we moved to Key West summer before my seventh grade year, and then we stayed there. So throughout all my adolescence and in college, when I would go home, you know, to visit my family and to see my parents, it was to Key West, and you know, my early years of my marriage as well. So I've always wanted to take readers home with me, you know, quote unquote home with me to Key West. Book one is kind of like what you said. Book one is more like a welcome to the island. You know, Luis is our hero. He's part of the Navajo familia, like the main familia of the series. So he's local, but Sarah is a tourist. She's there. She's coming in town for a week vacation with her family. They're kind of judgmental. She's really iffy about the whole thing. And her boyfriend stands her up as soon as she lands, and she gets a phone call that is not coming. And she meets Luis at the airport and convinces him to pretend to be her boyfriend for the week. That's a fake relationship romance. But all of the things that they do throughout the week, they're touristy things. They're on the train, they go to Hemingway House, you know, he takes her to South Beach. All of those, I hoped with Island Affair, was if you've never been to Key West, I hope the trip and you've seen kind of a lot, some, not all, but some of the highlights that you would see. And you feel like you visited there and you had your toes in the sand at South Beach with Luis and Sarah. But if you have visited, I hope that it rekindles your memories and you feel like you visited again. That's with Island Affair. And with Anchored Hearts, you know, Ana Maria and Alejandro both grew up on the island and they had a good romance just when they graduated from high school. Circumstances, they broke up and Alejandro left and Ana Maria never went to go meet up with him like he thought she would, and she has valid reasons for why she didn't go. But because it's a reunion, they're sharing memories of when they were growing up and the things that they did, like, you know, we hung at Higgs Beach at night and or at Astro City and Higgs Beach. Those are things that my sister and I did when we were in high school. And granted, you know, a couple decades probably before Ana Maria and Alejandro were doing that. But in visiting the island through the years, I've seen like how it's changed and how the things that have remained the same. And so Anchored Hearts is more like an homage to those of us who grew up there, those who are still there. And so you do see parts of the island, but they're different parts and they're with different memories. And so I enjoyed writing both of them. There's a piece of me in both of them, you know, but that writing Anchored Hearts, and again, maybe it was in part over the pandemic and missing Fania and worrying about, you know, are we ever going to be able to get back to the before Taz, that it was special remembering parts of my before time and sharing those with readers through Anchored Hearts.
I love this. I love, like, we can take, you know, if we just like take a trip to Key West. I think Key West is going to be one of those places I want to visit next year, because I can take both books and take it like to see the different places. Like, I think Island Affair is like what a tourist would do, and Anchored Hearts what a local would do. And it's kind of like give you like a roadmap of like, you know, different places, different sites, different scene, like, you know, and get a sense of like, you know, the culture of, you know, what you experience being in the Keys and how it's different from the mainland, you know.
Yeah, well, like the scene in Anchored Hearts where they are at White Street Pier and a couple, Alejandro and Ana Maria are there with Sarah and oh my goodness, his name, I think it's Brandon. I was like, he's a secondary character. And I was like, oh my gosh, his name flew out of my head. But they're at White Street Pier and they're getting ready to do a photo shoot and Alejandro's gonna take the pictures. And a couple rides by on bikes. And that's what we've done as when we've gone back to visit my whole family. Actually, a few years ago, mom and papi celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. And so we went on a cruise, probably like 45 people.
Oh my gosh.
And one of the stops, we specifically made one of the stops, you know, we took a cruise that stopped in Key West because, you know, they want, that was such a big chunk of their married life and of our life. And so maybe about 15 of us, 12 of us, my sister and her whole family and my brother's two kids and my girls, all of us, we rented bikes and we biked around the island while we were there so we could point out, hey, look, here's our high school. And so we went down White Street, you know, White Street Pier and Higgs Beach and all of that. So you can really, anything that's in there, in the activities that Luis and Sarah do in Island of Fire, or that Ana Maria and Alejandro do in Anchored Hearts. If you're there for a day, if you're there for a weekend, I would totally say rent. Some used to be like $10. I don't know if that's gone up now, you know, post pandemic, but rent a bike. And it's a fabulous way to see the island, you know, and be able to take your time.
Oh my gosh, I love this. And I love the scene of the Yunque, of Alejandro's accident.
Ah.
I've mentioned those waterfall and those are, I was like, why does he do that? I don't understand.
I know. I could see his mom. Mommy, Elena would be at the bottom there. ¿Qué estás haciendo? What are you doing? Yes. So I was saying that as I was writing figuring out what his scene was and what this daredevil had.
Yeah, I was like, I know the cotorras are, for listeners and parrots, are cute and stuff, but no, don't do that. For our listeners, Yunque is the rainforest. It's one of the main rainforests in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Well, it's not San Juan, it's Grande in Puerto Rico. So, but yeah.
It is the only rainforest in the you know, U.S. national parks system, yeah. El Yunque. It's beautiful. I will say I have not been post Maria, Hurricane Maria, but I have familia there and say it's coming back. I don't know how it is right now, like, you know, pandemic. People not being able to go and travel could have helped some of their growth, I would think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
didn't know. But used to be able to.
Yeah, I think Puerto Rico, well, they shut down. They literally have shut down stuff.
Yeah.
I think they're most people are getting vaccinated. The vaccine's happening. And so things are going back to normal. But I don't know how the tourist system, like the tourists are people coming back? I'm assuming they are because they don't need a passport. And there's like, every American's like, get me out of here. But you know, right. I don't know. I think it probably the rainforest took a break from all the people looking at them and maybe like,
yeah,
it was like, ooh, we're going to get better. Just like,
yeah, yes, it's beautiful and it has beautiful waterfalls, but yeah. The part where, you know, in Anchored Hearts, you know, Alejandro comes back home after 12 years, because he's been hurt. He fractured his left tibia pretty badly and had to have surgery. And needs help like recovering. And so he's forced to come back home. Mm-hmm. And I think like the little blurb I have is desires and disappointments collide when a prodigal son returns home to the blazing Key West sun, meddling mommies and the woman he left behind, but never forgot. Yeah. So that's like the blurb. But so Alejandro is coming back kicking and screaming, not kicking so much because he's hurt, but he got hurt. He had a photo shoot. He is an award-winning adventure and commercial photographer. And post a shoot in Puerto Rico, he stayed behind and was hiking in El Yunque, the rainforest. And he came across one of the Puerto Rican parrots that has been, was really close to, you know, becoming extinct. Becoming endangered, and thanks to the efforts of some people there in an organization in Puerto Rico, they're coming back. And so he had the bright idea to try to follow the parrot to see if he could get some great photos. And so he climbed up some rocks alongside a waterfall, which you're allowed to do in some areas, but the rocks are super, super slippery. I have slipped on them, so I can account that yes, That's not a wives' tale. That is the truth. Mm-hmm. And Hannibal, sure enough, fell, you know, slipped off of the rocks, landed on some rocks below instead of in the water. And that's how he got hurt.
Yes. Oh, painful.
Painful. Yes, yes. Writing, and you know, that happens backstory. Mm-hmm. But for me, wanting to know as much as I could about him and his injury, because his injury does come into play, you know, at the beginning, mm-hmm. throughout the book. Mm-hmm. So I read a lot on the internet. I watched a lot of, and I am not a blood and guts person, so I watched through squinty eyes and through a hand held over my face and just poking through my fingers. Watched a lot of surgeries and, post-surgery and all of that, trying to get it, you know, try to get it as correct as I could. My middle daughter is a physical therapist, so I talked with her about, okay, post-surgery, what, you know, that kind of thing. But it was interesting learning about it, but it was also painful thinking about anybody who would have gone through, you know, what Alejandro went through. But it was interesting research.
Yeah, so let's chat about Summer in the City, the novella. What's the elevator pitch for that one?
Ooh, Summer in the City is an anthology. It has three novellas. They're about 30,000 words each. It's three really close friends. These girls, they are planning a girls' weekend to get out of the city on Saturday morning. But Friday night, they each have special plans. So they go their separate ways and a blackout hits the city, like boroughs wide, everything's shut down. And so the tie in through all three of the novellas is what happens, the shenanigans that ensue when each heroine finds herself stuck with an unlikely hero. And the first novella is Night at the Museum by Lori Wilde. And that's, they're stuck at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Mine is second, it's called Lights Out. I'll get to it, but the third one is called Mind Games by Sarah Skilton. And that is a second chance romance. Lori's is kind of like the boy next door. The hero happens to be someone who lives in the heroine's building, and she's kind of had her eyes on him, but they've never connected. Sarah's Mind Games is a second chance romance, a college romance that ended horribly. And the hero is actually like a magician, a mentalist, and it's his big debut and show. And the heroine has gone because she wants to go and ruin it for him. And they're going to get stuck. So that's Mind Games. My novella is Lights Out. It's not really a second chance romance, because the hero and heroine knew each other in high school. They were in rival theater troupes. Mm. So there was interest, but they never acted on it because they were rivals. So but there was that interest there. Mateo Garza is a rising Broadway star, in my mind, a la Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Okay.
And he has spent the past like decade of his life working on his passion project. And it's opening night of Clemente, the man, the myth, the legend. It's a musical about Roberto Clemente, mm-hmm. Famous Puerto Rican baseball player and all-star, Major League Baseball all-star, and also humanitarian. And mm-hmm. so Mateo's on stage, and it's in the middle of the first act. And this show, he has invested his time and money. He's got familia and friends who have also invested money. And so he's got a lot riding on it. And in the audience is Vanessa Rios, and she is no longer performing. Vanessa's now a writer, and she's also a theater critic. And in his last play, she gave a scathing review. So he's, you know, when he spots her in the audience, he's thinking, oh my God, if he, you know, he cannot chance any bad reviews. He needs this show to make it big, because so many people have trusted in him and in his vision, and there's a lot riding on it, and the power goes out.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of the first act. And so then Vanessa and Mateo wind together, and because it's a romance, romantic shenanigans ensue.
Oh, so, I love this.
Yes, yes. And I will say, Summer in Vanessa and Mateo's novella, I have a little Easter egg for that ties back to another book that I've recently written. I had one reader who has an arc who said, hey, is this, you know, is this kind of like the egg? And I said, yay, you found it. So if you're out there listening and you pick up Lights Out and Summer in the City, if you find my Easter egg, please reach out to me via email or social media, and I'll let you know if that is the correct Easter egg, or if you've managed to find one that I did not intend, which I would love to hear about that also.
I love when authors put Easter eggs, because it's like, it's just, I don't know, there's like a little, you feel special. The author thought of you, you know? Like,
well, oh, there's one in Anchored Hearts. I dropped like just a few lines, and I don't know if it's because I was still in the Broadway mindset, or honestly, my girls and I, we love, you know, Broadway shows. So we go, you know, pre-pandemic whenever I could get up to the city. And so there's like a half a sentence, you know, or like four words because of copyright, of a line in from a Hamilton. And it just came out, and I kept writing. That was not like purposefully. That's just how it came out in the character's perspective. And I had a reader on Instagram in their story tag me. They had she had taken a picture of the page, mm-hmm. and said, you know, Pris Oliveras, is this intentional? Is this a Hamilton that I'm finding here? And I was like, hey, yes, you ratted me out. But yes, it was just a probably my subconscious speaking.
I love this. Oh, can't wait. Broadway's opening up. I got a message that Hamilton's opening up on September 14th. I got the message. I was like, it's
open. I know. I did too. I'm a little nervous. I mean, it's great for the performers. I just can't, yeah. You know, I have a family member that works in the performance industry. She's mm-hmm. no longer like seeking, because she's the business side and the agenting side. And, you know, so hearing a little bit about how clients are, you know, or clients that, you know, within their agency, not hers, you know, or just like the industry in general. And then you know, she was musical theater in college. She's got a lot of friends from musical theater who, you know, so like the people in the industry at all levels, performers, stage managers, the people that worked in the booth, the people that, you know, the people that worked as, you know, in the concession, all of that, you know, in so many industries, have got to have been hurting, not having their income, mm-hmm. you know, so you get that. I'm also a little nervous about, wow, 100% capacity, I think is how they're opening up.
I think so. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it's a weird, the conversations about 100 capacity. I'm like, I don't know if we're ready. And I don't know, like, you know, maybe because the majority of people are vaccinated and we may get herd immunity and things are maybe easier. And we're wearing masks and like, mm-hmm. we didn't get the flu this year because we wore masks, you know, so maybe like there's a possibility, but I feel like it's, like, it's definitely strange. You know, I know New York is opening up. Like, I work for a New York company, so we know, like, it looks like, even though the Blasio says is opening up in July, I think the word on the street, at least the people going back to work, are in September after the kids get vaccinated. So
I think it's probably a combination of a little bit of, I don't want to use the term PTSD because that mm-hmm. is real. You know, there are people that have had harrowing experiences and, you know, and can claim that term. But just a little bit of our psyche has been kind of shaken, right? And so I will say for me, I wouldn't neighborhood because I didn't have to. And, you know, and if I did, it was to like drive to the Walmart and just park there and someone put groceries in the back of my car. I didn't even get out. But, you know, I would go to Trader Joe's because I need my dark chocolate covered coffee beans, especially when on deadline. Or those donut chips are like the best that I can find. But it was every few weeks, all masked up, you know, pants and things are all over the place. And right. So I think that conditioning, but at the same time, like you said, we've you know, people have had their vaccine. If we're using safety precautions, that, you know, you've got to get back to some kind of normalcy and trust. I think it's just about being safe and trying to make smart decisions and looking out for yourself and those around you maybe.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. It's exciting. As a Broadway lover, I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot wait, you know, to be able to go back. But at the same time, there's that half of my brain probably from the last year saying, oh my gosh, are we sure?
I think it's just like it's a weird space to be, because I think I think it's hard to just go from, it feels like 0 to 100. I feel like we just need to go baby steps. like you're like, okay, what's happening? Like, you know, like exposure, like a little bit of exposure, like, okay, maybe I'll this time I'll leave my neighborhood and I'll see something.
Right. Well, it was a lot for me was this, you know, because like I said at the beginning, I'm up here in Philly now. But again, I was used care and caution, you know, in the airport, and and I'm thrilled to be up here. I'm excited. I'll be like a week. I thought I might have been in New York City release week of Summer in the City, but I'm staying in Philly a week longer. So that first week of June, I'm going to be in New York City visiting my old my first daughter. And so my plan is to go to the Booth Theater, which is where Mente, where Mateo's musical is his opening night, and then with Summer in the City, and then walk the trail, walk the path that Mateo and Vanessa would have walked on their way to his apartment when, you know, when they're stuck together, and either go live on social media or at least take some pictures to share, like here. That, you know, in my mind, this is where Mateo lives, and here's the, you know, here's the theater where he would have been, and here's where they would have stopped, and, you know, he gives her a piggyback ride, and to kind of just like be try to like walk the same walk that Mateo and Vanessa would have for, and share that on social media. So I get the whole idea of us, you know, people wanting to go back to some kind of normalcy, because I'm excited to go back to New York. At the same time, that I'm nervous and I'll be masked up and all of that, but it'll be nice to return to the city.
Yes, I think it'll be nice too. I think it's like, there are certain places I'm like, okay, go back to New York, see my friends. And it's like, I'm excited for that. I'm excited to just return, like, you know, to see the different sites, different places to eat, different places stuff to do.
Yeah.
Enough, like, you know, things are opening up slowly but surely, they're opening up. And I think it's just a new normal. Like, we'll be wearing masks and it's not the end of the world. You know, and we'll be washing our hands, which I think we should have been doing all along. So
yeah, I agree with you.
So so what are you working next?
So what am I working on next? I actually just turned in revisions. It's been a little bit harrowing, but I keep telling myself this is a good harrowing because these are deadlines and stressors that I actually prayed for when I was an unpublished author. But so I just in the middle of when I was wrapping up revisions was the release week for Anchored Hearts, but I just turned in early yesterday morning revisions for West Side Love Story. It's book one in a two book series that book one should be releasing next May, next summer ish. And the two books are loose retellings of Shakespeare plays or musicals based on two of his plays. The first one is West Side Love Story, and it introduces the Campo sisters. They all play in a mariachi band together. There are eight sisters, and throughout the gist of the story there is, and we have feuding mariachi bands that they're feuding, but their rift between the two patriarchs goes back for a couple decades, revolving around gentrification lines and property acquisition on the west side of San Antonio, Texas, where my papi was born and raised, and we have a lot of family there. So West Side Love Story is obviously then loosely Romeo and Juliet with the two feuding families. There's a battle of the mariachi bands in there. The two bands are on opposite sides, and Mariana and Angelo are star-crossed lovers in my version of West Side Story, and it just fits like the title because the gentrification issue that I'm, you know, that I've studied about and everything is on the west side of San Antonio. On the east side they've done, and so that's what I've got. I just turned in revisions. I should get a second round of revisions in about a week, and then this summer I will get started writing book two, which is a Kiss Me Kate retelling, and this one the tentative title right now is Kiss Me Catalina, and she's a second Campo sister.
I love that. Yes,
yeah, so I'm excited to I'll say a lot of readers have asked me, what about Enrique's book, the youngest brother of the Navarro familia? And I do have a book, I do have a story for Enrique, and I'm not going to say the heron's name because I want you to read Anchored Hearts and you'll find out. Mm-hmm. But I do have a story for him, but that little rascal has told me he's not quite ready to settle down yet. And the publishing world being what it is, I sold this other proposal. So I'm letting Enrique still play the field and have some fun over there for a little bit while I work with, you know, and have fun playing with the Campo sisters. But I will find a way to get back to Enrique, because their mom, Mama Navarro, will be waving a chancla at me, telling me you need to wrap things up over here. She wants all her kids paired off. And I do have that story, but for right now, I am really excited to take readers to my papi's hometown of San Antonio and introduce the Campo sisters.
I love that you take us to different places. So you took us to Chicago in your first series, you took it to Key West, now San Antonio, like Texas, like, oh, so cool.
Yes. My hope is to be able to write one in Puerto Rico. So eventually, so we'll see how I do that. Maybe up here in Philly, because I've loved getting to know the city, you know, through my daughters, my middle daughter being here. And I was a thrill. I will say writing Anchored Hearts was hard. I think it was just all the angst and everything. But last May, I was writing the novella that Lights Out. And it was just a joy. It was a way for me to bring together a bunch, you know, three of the things that I've loved through, you know, and that I enjoyed doing, that, you know, baseball and the side for Puerto Rico and Broadway, and kind of put that all together into one little, you know, 30,000 novella was a lot of fun. So
I love this. So the last question is, and this is like fun for, you know, tell us about a book that you can stop gushing about. Maybe tell us, like, you have a bunch of author friends. So maybe plug in some of your author friends.
Yes. Thank you for asking. I will say book recommendations, and sticking with retelling, first of all, Sonali Dave, is her book 3 in her Jane Austen retellings. It's going to release this summer. It's called Incense and Sensibility. So it's on pre-order now. And I've had the opportunity to read version. We exchange work and we critique, and Yash and India's story is just beautiful. While you're waiting for Incense and Sensibility, I would tell you go out and check Pride, Prejudice, and Other Flavors is book 1, and then Recipe for Persuasion is book 2. So you can go read those and get ready, pre-order and treat yourself. It'll auto-download or auto-mail to you, Incense and Sensibility. Also, this week, Zoraida Nova, her book 2, called Illusionary, but it's book 2 in her duology. It's the Hollow Crown duology. It's enemies to lovers and magical realism. She said it's like inspired by medieval Spain. She just has an amazing way with words, like, you know, Sonali, it's emotion and angst and swoony romance and culture. You know, you dive into the Indian culture, and same with Zoraida. She just has a beautiful way with words. So I would check out her Illusionary is book 2. And then a debut, because I love reading, you know, for debut authors, and when I find one that I love and giving them a shot, you only get one debut release, right? In at least per genre, maybe. And last December, Denise Williams' How to Fail at Flirting was released, and I had the wonderful opportunity to read an arc and to blurb. It's fantastic. It's gotten great reviews. So it's not just, me saying this, deservedly so. It's set in the world of academia, and there's a little bit of, I will say there's a trigger warning. You know, there had been some previous relationship, like mental, kind of abuse, and that their heroine is overcoming that, but she is strong and she is funny, and the hero is so sexy and sweet, and they tell corny jokes, and I laughed and I cried. It's a great empowerment that the heroine is I loved her. So that's How to Fail at Flirting. And then another debut that I would recommend is Libby Hubscher's Meet Me in Paradise. It's beautiful. It's two sisters that are you know, totally different personalities, and you find out why, you know, based on their mother. And it is a romance. It's a romance for the older sister, mm-hmm. but just beautifully written. It's similar to Denise's, where, you know, there are times where I laughed. There are lots of times where I swooned. I will say I cried, yes, more in Libby's. I don't want to give anything away. So, you know, the storyline, but it's beautiful. Both of those debuts. And then this is probably like a year ago, but Yafa Santos, another debut mm-hmm. With, Adios Mio, se me fue, her name.
Taste of Sage.
Yes, A Taste of Sage. I looked up at my books and I was like, that's not the right title. And so A Taste of Sage with Yafa. And if you're looking for non-romance, but historical fiction, Denny S. Bryce, her debut just came out like within the last month. That is Wild Woman and the Blues. It's like a dual timeline. There is a young man in the present day. He's doing some history, looking research about the jazz era, looking for some information. And you go back to the, you know, 20s jazz era. And so you get both of this woman's story in the past and how it's affecting, you know, how it might affect his story here in the present day. It's beautifully written. I wouldn't expect anything less. Denny's fabulous. And her covers, I think the covers of all of these, Zoraida's is amazing. And but Denny's covers is super, super beautiful. So any of those, I think you read any Sonali Dave, any Zoraida Cordova, any Denise Williams or Libby Hunter, Yafa Santos or Denny S. Bryce, you would be happy.
I love this so much. I read some of these books and the other ones are on my TBR and I'm like, yes, I need you. It's so good.
Yes. I would also say real quickly, our Latinx romance mm-hmm. contingent, our group is small but mighty. It's growing. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, follow our hashtag. We use hashtag Latinx ROM. So LatinxROM. If you follow that hashtag, you'll be able to find some of us and maybe find some new Latina and Latinx romance authors out there.
That's amazing. Thank you, Priscilla. So tell us where you can find you online.
Oh my gosh, I'm online probably too much, if you ask my mommy. But there are a million ways to misspell Priscilla. I got a gift. A boyfriend in seventh grade with my name monogrammed incorrectly on a sweatshirt. So I use Pris, P-R-I-S, instead of Priscilla. But you can find me Pris Oliveras, O-L-I-V-E-R-A-S. That's my handle for Twitter, for Instagram, on Facebook. I have an author page, and it would be facebook.com/, you know, Pris Oliveras author. And same thing, my website, PrisOliveras.com. I try to keep my events calendar updated fairly well. I have a new assistant, marvelous, and she's helping me with that. But so typically you can find me anywhere on the socials, or hopefully my event calendar is up to date with things that I have going on, any sales for book sales. I have heard that during the month of June, my Match to Perfection series, so His Perfect Partner, Her Perfect Affair, and His Perfect Melody, is the whole series is going to be on sale. I don't know if it's print, but I do know digital, and I haven't heard prices yet. So as soon as I get that, I will start promoting it to let people. So keep an eye out for that. If you'd like to jet up to Chicago and maybe go to a Cubs game with Lily and Their Perfect Melody, or do a little fireside dancing with Tomas and Yasmin in His Perfect Partner, or I'm sorry, but be like morning sickness with Rosa in, that does not sound very appealing, in Her Perfect Affair. But the Fernandez sisters will always be special to me because they were my debut series.
I love this. Thank you, Priscilla, for being on the show.
Sure. Thanks so much for the invite. Adios, everyone.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.